Bridgewater State University is proud to sponsor this conversation from Boston Public Radio. More at bridgew.edu/gradclass.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie. And you know, Marjorie, usually I'm accused of giving other people a headache. In that segment, I gave myself a headache. Bill McKibben is an author, educator, and environmentalist. You know, he's the co-founder of 350.org and the founder of thirdact.org. He has a newsletter on Substack titled The Crucial Years. He's also got a new serialized book, the name of which is The Other Cheek, an epic nonviolent yarn. Bill McKibben, we are so glad to talk to you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Happy 2022. I'm glad everything's going so well already this year.
I know. Just about blew a gasket. I don't even know why we talk about those things. I get so worked up into a frenzy. But, you know, I'm about to get worked up into a frenzy again. So what the hell? So,
it's
Bill,
not as if the topics are entirely dissimilar, you know.
No, that's a very good point. So I want to tell you a little anecdote. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill. I was interrupting you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I want to hear.
Well,
I was just going to say, the world where we live in, where we've decided that science is optional, and that we don't want to work together as a society on anything, is a really hard place to solve big problems. It's funny. I've just been finishing up this book that'll be out in May. That in some ways is a memoir of growing up in Lexington. And it's bigger than that, but that's part of it. And one of the little parts I was just going through was reading the old back issues of the Lexington Minuteman from the 50s when they were inoculating people against polio.
Yes.
And, you know, this was a moment when it was really was kind of slightly scary and people didn't exactly know about that, but everybody was lining up to do the right thing, you know, understanding that that's what a community is, that that you are willing to take a tiny risk in your own behalf in order to serve the larger interest. And the analogies to where we are with climate change are pretty clear, although in this case it's less individuals who aren't willing to do the right thing, but the corporations and so on who have managed to destroy the Build Back Better bill, the only real climate legislation. Well, we still don't have the Congress has never passed serious climate legislation, and it looks like we may never.
Well, we're going to get back to Build Back Better in a second, actually.
That brings us to something we did want to talk to you about, because Jim and I over Christmas both saw the same Netflix film, and we both really liked it. But we thought, geez, what would Bill McKibben think about this? So we're going to play a little sound from the Netflix film Don't Look Up, and this is where Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Jennifer Lawrence's character join a Morning Joe style show co-hosted by Tyler Perry and Kate Blanchett, and we're going to get your review of this film after the sound.
Welcome to the show.
Can I ask you one thing before we go any further? I just have to know this. Is there life out there? Can you tell us yes or no? Final answer.
We don't have the data. But sure, in the vastness of space, why not? Yes, aliens are real.
See, I knew I would like this guy. I didn't say you owe me $50.
I'm not saying
I knew I would like this guy.
Flying saucers.
Sure you are. That's what you're saying. That's what he's saying.
Dr. Mindy, we'll never get out of here.
I love it. Yes or no, final answer.
So I thought this film, it wasn't perfect, but it was a perfect analogy of where we are with climate change, it seems to me.
Well, that was, I will say, you picked my favorite minute of the whole film, which I liked the whole film, but I thought Tyler Perry was over-the-top funny, and anyone who's ever had to go on a book tour or anything and do a lot of TV news will instantly recognize the moment. The other great moment was when they're back in the green room and the actress learns that that there's a comet going to crash into the Earth, and she says, "Oh, I've got a dope tattoo of a comet on my back." Yep. Okay.
I know.
On the Instagram now. The movie's a quite brilliant allegory. It's not perfect because you know, one of the things that makes climate change hard is that it doesn't wipe us out overnight, you know. And if it did, perhaps it would concentrate our minds a little more. But just as a depiction of how those kind of forces in society that keep us from dealing seriously with big troubles, I thought it was brilliant. And I'm so glad it's become the most watched film in Netflix history.
Great.
Which is a hard thing to even imagine, how many eyeballs that is.
So, Bill McKibben, you mentioned Build Back Better. We spend almost every day excoriating Joe Manchin to no avail. We know that there was Glasgow, and the United States committed to reduce greenhouse gases by 50% by the end of the decade. We know that in a bow to Joe Manchin, arguably the most important part of the Build Back Better legislation relating to climate, the so-called Clean Electricity Program that would have rewarded power plants to switch from fossil fuels to solar, wind, etc., was eliminated. We know that there is $500-plus billion in the $2 trillion bill that is aimed at climate change. But as you said in your intro, not only is voting rights about an inch away from dead, Build Back Better appears to be no better. What's the consequence of inaction on these provisions?
I mean, the consequence of inaction is we don't have a snowball's chance in hell, which is probably the right metaphor, of reaching those goals that Biden announced it was pretty much predicated on the clean energy standard that got nixed early on by Manchin. But, you know, the sort of backup hope was maybe there was enough tax credits left to get us at least part of the way there. But, you know, everybody spends a lot of time shouting at Manchin, this guy who lives in a yacht and drives a Maserati and so on. It's worth remembering also that there are 50 Republican senators who are unwilling to do anything about climate change, and that all the big corporations that constantly are running ads assuring us of their great interest in sustainability, the Apples and the Googles and whatever of the world, all their lobbyists have been fighting hard against Build Back Better, too, because it raises the corporate income tax rate a couple of percentage points. And apparently they've decided that, I don't know what they've decided. I don't quite understand their business plan for selling iPhones on a, you know, hellscape, but that seems to be the plan. And so there's plenty of, it's a rotten, rotten demonstration of the extraordinary power of money in our political system. Joe Manchin took more money from the fossil fuel industry than anybody else in Washington, which is not an easy competition to win. And, if you were the fossil fuel industry, you could not have scripted this whole thing any better. I mean, it just plays out over months after months after months. Nothing gets done. The momentum of the Biden administration on climate change fizzles. And they're afraid to do anything serious with executive action in the Biden administration, I think, for fear that it'll offend Manchin and keep him from voting for something he's probably not going to vote for anyway.
Well, can we stop there for a second? We were talking, we had Ayanna Pressley on the other day talking about, you know, if these things aren't going to happen, why isn't Biden doing what he can on comparable issues like student loan forgiveness through executive action? On the climate front, what could Joe Biden do that he is not, Bill McKibben, to make, even if it doesn't make the same impact of Build Back Better?
Yeah, there's nothing he can do will have the same impact as that money, because the thing he can't do on his own is write checks. And it's, there's money needed to make this transition work. But there are things he could be doing that would make life much harder for the fossil fuel industry. He could be using his authority to cancel projects like this, tar sands line 3 pipeline. He could be, instead of leasing more of the Gulf of Mexico for oil drilling than anybody before him, he could be refusing to do that, holding it up. He could be stopping the expansion of liquefied natural gas exports, the build out of all these ports along the Gulf Coast, and holding the industry to account. He clearly you know, it doesn't want to do these things for two reasons. One is that the price of gas is high and he doesn't want to be blamed for it, even though these things don't actually, in the short run, do anything to the price of gas. And the second thing is there's been courting Manchin all along, and they had for a year some hope that he'd been leading them to think he might actually play along, and so they didn't want to frost him. I don't know what they do now, to tell you the truth, and I don't know what they do on protection of our democracy, which is the other linked issue here. We can't over the long run do what we need to do on climate if we don't have a functioning democracy either. So it's a low moment right now. I think one has to say, and it's not as if the world is, you know, the climate is stopping its increase in temperature in order to allow our broken political system time to heal. Yesterday it was 123 degrees in Australia,
yes,
which is the hottest temperature ever recorded in the Southern Hemisphere.
And you mentioned Alaska, too. They had a huge heat wave there as well?
Alaska, so there have been a couple of events in 2021 that really served to terrify scientists. One was, you'll remember back in June, that heat dome that formed over the Pacific.
Yes, Northwest in Canada.
And all of a sudden we were breaking records, and here's the important thing, not by 1 degree or 2 degrees, which is what happens when you have a 100-year temperature record. If you ever break a record, which is rare, it's by a tiny bit, right? Because that's how the world works. Except that the world is breaking. Something's happening to the jet stream that seems to be related to the melt of the Arctic. And so the jet stream gets stuck. So in June, you had that heat dome, and the temperature in Canada got to 121 Fahrenheit, the hottest since the Pleistocene in Canada, almost certainly, hotter than it's ever been in Europe or South America. In late December, it was Alaska's turn, and they were breaking temperature records by 20 degrees in places. It was the numbers were so extraordinary that the thing that's scary about it is we know that we're in this global warming world now, but our kind of perception of it is that there'll be a sort of linear increase in temperature. It'll get a little hotter steadily, and somehow we'll cope. But that doesn't seem to be how it's going to work. It seems like it's going to be a series of systems breaking down that result in entirely different possibilities, none of them good, for what can happen on the surface of the Earth. So the pressure is firmly on, and we can sit and moan about Congress all we want, but we better figure out some other ways to go after this too, which is why we're working hard at Third Act now, this organizing group we've got going for people over the age of 60, to try and take on the other power center in our society, Wall Street, the huge banks that finance the fossil fuel industry. And the good news is people are lining up to, you know, take the pledge that they'll withdraw their money by year's end if we can't persuade Chase and Citi and Wells Fargo and Bank of America to cease lending for climate destruction. So we're running a little short of bullets, but we've got to use what we've got here and see what we can get done, because time really, really, really is short.
Well, as you wrote in one of your pieces, you said you're not easily scared, but this stuff is pretty scary, and stopping global warming is no longer possible. I mean, we can just diminish it somewhat. But I wanted to ask you, Bill McKibben, and we're speaking with Bill McKibben, the founder of 350.org and thirdact.org, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in a second. In your view of just a little, Don't Look Up, the Netflix thing with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence, you said the media deserves a lot of blame in our attitudes toward climate change. I think we do, too, because meteorologists have been climate change deniers for too long, and they don't talk about these storms and the relationship to climate change. But what did you argue?
Well, I one of the things I said was that, first of all, that in the elite media, the Times, the Post, Boston Public Radio, people are doing a good job now, it must be said. And there's a lot of great reporting going on. The problem is, and this really a problem beyond the problems inherent in having an advertising-based media system where, you know, big companies can... The other problem is that climate change has happened just a tiny bit too slowly for the news to quite take it in. So, you know, it's happening in over the course of years and decades, which in geological time is, you know, a split second. But, you know how the news cycle works. I mean, TV works on maybe a 24-hour news cycle, and Twitter works on about a 24-second news cycle. And at that pace, you know, climate change every day is the most serious thing happening on planet Earth. But there's almost never a day when it's the most novel thing that's happening. And so it doesn't quite fit easily with our understanding of what news is. And so we're going to have to keep trying to figure out how to... And I think the better now, I think the way that we probably should think about it is sort of the way we think about the economy, as journalists, as something that we have to look at every day, even though it's, you know, basically taken as a huge whole, kind of the same from day to day. But we dutifully chart its every up and down with meticulous care. You know, the NPR tells you the stock price every half hour, whether you want to know it or not. You know, and so we just have to recalibrate a little bit how we think about these things.
You know, can I
track
climate
totals like the Dow Jones? That was your line, wasn't it? That's what we should do. Yeah. I love that.
One of the things so interesting is there are things we don't know about. Like that, I don't know that people are completely interested in. So, I wrote a little piece for my Substack newsletter the other day, just from this thing that I'd come across, this fact I'd come across, and the fact was this: almost 40%, about 40% of all the ship traffic in the world is composed solely of moving coal and oil and gas from one place to another.
Incredible.
So. The implication of which is, if we moved to renewable energy, sun and wind and batteries, which we're now completely capable of doing, you'd instantly cut the traffic in the ocean of big ships almost in half, which would be a great thing in a thousand ways, you know. You wouldn't be running into whales and having pirates and all the other things that we know about. But it's just the sheer volume. And so people, when I put this up on little newsletter up on Twitter, people went crazy, sending it back and forth to each other, because it suddenly kind of reshaped people's sense of the world a little. And the point I was trying to make in it was, we're capable now of moving, changing paradigms, moving from a world where you have to constantly be mining and shipping and moving things back and forth all over the world to power our lives, to a world where you put up a solar panel and then, you know, the sun delivers the energy for free every morning. That's why Exxon hates the whole thing so much. To their mind, it's the stupidest business model anyone ever came up with, you know, because they're used to getting paid every month for another load. But we could be seriously dematerializing a lot of what we do on this earth, and very quickly, if we could overcome that combination of inertia and vested interest that at the moment are preventing us from taking action at speed.
By the way, Marjorie and I were as stunned as you were. It's one thing, though, for us to be stunned as compared to you by that 40% statistic on the shipping thing.
I should have known, yeah.
Hey, Bill, Michelle Wu is now the mayor. When she was a candidate, you went out of your way whenever we were talking to you, even if we didn't ask you. When we're talking about what do we do if the federal government doesn't do what it needs to do, you talked about local leaders doing it. Is she aberrational in 2022, or are there other woos who you think get it in terms of what needs to be done at the local level in this country?
I think that there are others. I mean, look, I don't know her well, but I got to say she strikes me as an exceptional human being.
Yes.
But I think that there are local and state officials in the kind of blue pockets around the country who are doing interesting things. The governor of California put a lot of interesting climate stuff in his new budget. And, I mean, that's not insignificant. California,
sure,
by itself is the fifth biggest economy,
yep,
on planet Earth. So, you know, there's lots of places where people are working, which is good. Can it generate change fast enough to, at this point, probably not, but at least for the moment when we can't do things centrally, we can have some real laboratories for experimentation. The problem is that people like Mayor Wu are going to be starved of the cash that they need to make the changes that they want. That's where that Build Back Better money was going to end up. Those tax credits go for the entrepreneurs who want to, take Boston and put in air source heat pumps in thousands of apartments and so on and so forth. But I have no doubt that she will do what she can with the hand she's been dealt.
Bill McKibben, we only have a little bit more than a minute and a half left, but can you tell people that don't know about Third Act that might be interested in getting involved?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is for old people like me.
And me.
Well, not me, of course.
Not you, of course.
Yeah.
We've got two tasks: defending the stability of our planet and defending the stability of our democracy. And they're important generational tasks. You know, our first act, we were around to bear witness to or participate in really profound cultural, social, political transformation. If perhaps our second act was slightly more geared toward consumerism than citizenship, well, water under the bridge. In our third act, we emerge with resources, skills, grandchildren, and lots of incentive to leave a better legacy than the one we're headed for now. So this organizing, which is just a few months old, is going great guns, and people can join in at thirdact.org. Our next big national call is January 26th, and my old friend Jamie Raskin is going to be there to help lead it, and talk particularly about the kind of threats to our democracy and the ways that, I mean, he led the impeachment of the last
trial.
And with incredible words about American history, that's a history we've got to start reclaiming. And if people are interested, it's going to be fun.
Thirdact.org.
Thank you,
Bill,
so
we can't
much.
Tell you how much we appreciate your time. Be well.
Take care, guys. Be well, and Happy New Year.
To you, too. Bill McKibben is an author, educator, and environmentalist, co-founder of 350.org, and founder of what he just talked about, Third Act. org. Plus, he's got a newsletter on Substack called The Crucial Years and a new serialized book, The Other Cheek, an epic nonviolent yarn. Coming up with her thoughts on voting rights, the Maya Angelou Quarter, and 110 years of Oreo cookies. It's GBH's own Callie Crossley. She is next on 89.7 GBH, Boston Public Radio.